Welcome to A World Powerfully Transformed, a new podcast from Unity on Cape Cod. We are creating community, celebrating love, and transforming lives. In this special series, we will bring you exciting, positive spiritual teachings, as well as thought-provoking interviews with guests from a diverse spectrum of the greater community. Now let us join Reverend Tony for this week's presentation.
Welcome to the Unity on Cape Cod podcast. I'm Reverend Tony Cryer, the spiritual leader here at Unity on Cape Cod. We are part of Unity Worldwide Ministries, which has a vision of a world powerfully transformed by the growing movement of our shared spiritual awakening. Each week, I will be bringing you special guests, and we'll be talking about current issues and topics that are impacting our lives and how we can take a spiritual approach to transforming our world. So welcome. Come on in. Welcome back, everyone, to A World Powerfully Transformed. This today may be one of our most important podcasts to date. I have a local legend here from the Cape, Larry Brown, professor.
Actually, no, I don't have a PhD.
But he is an amazing, amazing person. And he's going through his life attempting to demonstrate spiritual principles in the world, which is what we teach here at Unity. So welcome, Larry.
Thank you.
I didn't bring a bio, so could you tell me a little bit about your background?
Sure. Born in Philadelphia in 1946, so I'm old. I've been teaching for 45 years, 42 years with school children, retired a few years ago, and I've been teaching adults at the Academy for Lifelong Learning at the college. Last winter, I had a woman 100 years old who was a senior in high school when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
Sharpest attack, remembered everything. I've been writing a column for the Cape Cod Times since Ronald Reagan was president. I think 37 years now, and I'm not sure on the math exactly, but that's somewhere around 1,300 columns, maybe, which I guess makes me a pretty opinionated person.
Excellent. And then, Larry, you taught at the Cape Cod Academy here in Cape Cod.
34 years here.
And you come a lot to speak for our interfaith services and tell us that you're a practicing Hindu. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know about practice. I've never been in India, and the cultural ways that Hindus from India practice their religion, that's not part of my rhythm. The ethics and the theology are more central for me. I was asked to speak at two parliaments of the world's religions. I published a book on Hindu theology in 1999 that was published in India by an outfit called Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, which is apparently a huge publisher of religious and cultural stuff in India. And they recommended me as a speaker at the Parliament of the World's Religion, and I didn't know that. So I got a letter from the Parliament inviting me in 99 to come to Cape Town, South Africa, and speak on faith in translation, on a Western approach to an Eastern theology. And then I came back in 2004 at Barcelona, where they had a Parliament of the World's Religions, to talk about doing interfaith television programming.
Fantastic.
So those are amazing experiences. 8,000 people from every faith from all over the world.
That's excellent.
In one place.
Well, that's why, you know, I'm excited to speak with you today, because I know that you have a rich interfaith background. And would you be willing to tell us a little bit about the core theology that you find in the Eastern religions that's attractive to you?
Sure. Where do I begin on that? First of all, one thing that strikes me about Western theology that seems odd to me is that Satan is given huge flexibility to appear in all kinds of guises and in all kinds of shapes. God is always and only God for most people in the West. The Eastern theology understands God as being much more multiformed,
mm-hmm.
more various, more plural.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be plural in the pure pantheistic sense of having different names for different gods. It's the understanding that the divine can show up in a variety of forms.
Excellent.
And so the admonition in the Eastern theology is look for God,
mm-hmm.
and look everywhere, because there is no place that's not God.
Amen.
And there's the story of a Christian missionary in India, and he sees a little boy finishing his devotions to a statue of Shiva, and when the boy's done, he says, "Little boy, I'll give you this apple if you can show me where your God is." And the boy says, "I'll give you two apples if you can show me where God is not."
Excellent.
and so it's a joke at the expense of Western missionaries, which goes down pretty easily over there. But it's, second, it makes a profound point. Show me where God is not.
Yes.
And so that kind of training, in a sense, it's almost shamanistic. The shaman is going to be, you know, in an oral tradition, is going to be telling the children that everything has a soul. Everything has its own intentionality. And so you have a split screen. You see the physical world around you, and you have to learn how to navigate that and do well in it. But you're also looking for the spiritual side of the same world, the spiritual half.
Yes.
And maybe it's more than half.
Yeah.
And to be tuned for that also. So I like the more flexible concept of the divine that you get in Hinduism and Buddhism. From Buddhism, I particularly like, and this was, I think, probably was always present in Hinduism, but it's interesting. The ancient Greeks, Plato particularly, believed in reincarnation, and Greece traded with India. And you just have to think that at some point he was wandering down on the Piraeus and he met some unusual looking people and started talking to them and came away with some ideas. And if you read Plato, I detested him when I studied him first in college. He was super bright. But very little compassion for ordinary people. He shrugged and he figured that ordinary people were too stupid to manage their own affairs, so he didn't like democracy. But there was no compassion behind it, just kind of a disapproval that most people just didn't know. And I wonder whether ancient India had that too, and whether Buddha was a corrective of sorts to say in the end, there's only one thing that really matters, and that's suffering, to comprehend it and to relieve it.
Yes.
If it's not about that, I don't have time, he said.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So that's why we're here today, to really look at how can we relieve our own suffering or the suffering of the world through spiritual principles. And what I like what you just said, the focus on the divine in everything. And you know that at Unity, we teach that everyone has the spark of divinity. But when I go out and try to express that in the world, people look at me sideways, like human beings can be divine, or we have God in us. And that's really the theme of the next series of talks I'm doing, is God in us. What does that mean? So what does that mean to you, Larry, that God is in us?
Well, first of all, I think the problem that some more conservative Christians have with is that they're not sure whether we're using a capital G or a small g. So say, wait a minute, you think you're God? You're the creator of the universe? That's blasphemous. How dare you? And yet the concept of the Holy Ghost is an essential part of Christian theology.
Yes.
And what, you know, the idea of God in us, when I would teach religion and geography, I taught world religions along with economics and politics.
Excellent.
And in ancient history, all the religions show up during the purview of ancient history. And so you get to do some theology with the kids then too. But I draw an egg with a yolk, and this kind of traditional way we visualize stuff is that the whole egg is the body, and maybe there's a yolk. There's something inside us. The spiritual thing is in us, or that we have a soul. And I don't think we have a soul the way we have a wallet or a social security number. We are a soul.
Yes.
And the real question is, why do we have bodies? Why have we been given this corporal stuff to drag around? And what is it we're supposed to be accomplishing in this plane, in these bodies, doing this stuff?
Great question.
What's our mission?
Yes.
So this is exactly stuff that I've heard you talking about with your congregants here in this church. What are we here to do? There's one of the Beatles songs, there's a refrain, "I'm the walrus," I think is the song. "Now that you know who you are, what are you going to do?"
Wow.
Now that you know who you are, what are you going to do? And if you can, and I think the idea of enlightenment in the East, and if I totally understood it, I'd be enlightened, so presumably I wouldn't be here. But I think what it is the understanding of our spiritual nature, not just intellectually, like it's a proposition that you nod your head, I imagine that's true, I probably have a soul. It's the understanding that you are a soul and that carries that understanding into everything you do all the time.
Nice.
There's conduct unbecoming a soul. And we need to be mindful of that. Someone asked Buddha at one point, so when you get enlightenment, then what do you do? And he shrugged. He said, well, chop wood, carry water. In other words, you're going to do all the same stuff that you did before. It's just that you will experience the world fundamentally differently.
Excellent.
And that's the goal, is to be able to see the world through that spiritual lens, as close to all the time as you can.
Yes.
And we're not good at that particularly. But that's the job, I think, to love this place.
All right. That's why I think our work is so important. You know, teaching spiritual principles, demonstrating spiritual principles in the same world, in the same everyday life, that people experience all the pain, suffering, anger, division. If we can show up and model a different type of experience and invite people into that experience, I feel there's where the evolution of our consciousness is rapidly accelerated. That's why I like hanging out with people like you, because I really do feel like when I talk to you, I start thinking differently, because I'm looking at stuff from a different perspective. I'm trying to look at what is the bigger picture and what does this mean for me as a soul and my purpose here. So could you tell us a little bit about, you know, at this stage in your life, what do you feel your purpose is here?
I think I was supposed to be a teacher. I think I was supposed to do that. I was in business for a while, and I was good at it. I talk easily, you know, but it just grew and grew on me. And then I had a very weird experience. Lily Tomlin, the comedian, once said that talking to God is normal behavior, but when God talks back to you, you probably need to see a good therapist. But I was on a business trip. I'd had an experience. My father had traveled in business all the time. And I had told myself as a boy, I was not going to do that. I was not going to be away from my family so much. And then lo and behold, I lost a job in Arizona just after my daughter was born. And I had to support my family. And somebody offered me a job in sales and marketing that was twice the salary I'd been making before. And it seemed like a very adult thing to say yes and start doing that. And after a bunch of years of doing it, my little girl climbed out of her crib one night. I came in really late, so it may have been 4 or 5 in the morning. And little Julie was athletic, and she climbed right up the bars of her crib and out down the other side, shinnied down like a little commando, and climbed into bed. And she was very delicate about this. She actually lifted one of my eyelids with her fingertips, and which is a way to wake up. And so I'm awake, and I see the profile of my little girl in the dark and two little dark eyes looking at me and this voice. And she said, so will you be here in the morning?
Mm.
And I said, no, sweetheart, I won't. I got to go back out. And she didn't say a word. She climbed out of bed, left the room. I could hear her crib creak as she climbed back in. And I just lay there and cried, and I realized that I was doing the wrong thing.
Mm.
Time for a change. So I'm coming back from a business trip, and I have a Volkswagen bus so I can sleep in the bus and save money. And I floated an experimental prayer. And that's a long story, and I can get into that if you want to, but I'm not sure this is where you want to go with this. But I hadn't been talking to God in a while. And so I floated this sort of a prayer that I had kind of come to a dead end of sorts. And I was spoken to inside my head. And there was some humor, but a fair amount of gravitas and sternness to this too. And basically what I was receiving was this. Okay, so you're talking to me? Are you talking to me? I don't want any ambivalence here that this is some experimental thing you're doing. If you're talking to me, the proper position is from the knees. So I pulled my van over and climbed into the back and got on my knees and repeated what I had just said. And nothing. Not a peep. No sense of presence. No voice. Nothing. On my own. Well, that was odd. So I got back in the van and drove home. Got my sleep. Woke up in the morning and I knew exactly what I needed to do. Still no sense of presence, just a lot of clarity, exactly what I needed. I went down to the library and I got a list of, I'm not certified to teach in public schools, but I went to private schools and private schools will hire people who aren't certified. So I made a list of schools near where I lived and that were on my business routes and started calling them and dropping in. And it turned into a teaching job.
And that was how many years ago?
Oh, gosh.
40?
I've taught for 42 years, so this would be 40. Well, now I've been teaching for 45 years, 46, about 47 years ago.
Excellent. Yeah. Wow. Great.
So.
So a couple things that you're talking to me about, which I want to respond mm-hmm. to before we get into what are you doing today,
is
that you heard something occurring in your consciousness, within you.
Yeah.
And that the interesting part of that for me is that you had a knowing within you that didn't, after that moment, didn't require any quote unquote external prompting or apparent external prompting, that you knew within your heart or in, you knew as a soul
yes.
what you needed to do yeah. in this life.
What's interesting too is that experiences like that do not necessarily fit tightly into anybody's particular theology.
Right.
They just happen.
Yep.
And at that point, you could say, well, so who was talking to you? The Lord of the universe? Was this God? And I'm not sure that the creator of the universe has time to talk to me in the back of a bus, but it was divinity talking to me.
Right.
And I've decided, when I was in college, and I wanted, by the time I was old, if I lived that long, I wanted to have answers to all of this stuff. I wanted to be a sage. I wanted to have the answers.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to the point now where it doesn't matter so much. There's a line in Hindu scriptures, you have a right to the work, says God, but the results belong to me. And that's a real discipline. You don't do stuff to get to heaven or to reach enlightenment, if that's the goal, if you're Eastern. You do them because they're in front of you and they seem to need doing. They seem right to do. Somebody is suffering. Something needs to be done. And you do them as best you can, and then you offer it up. Because you may not get the result you want, but that may not be what's important anyway. Or the result may be a lot longer in coming than you had planned. Teachers have got to know that. We do stuff with kids, and years later sometimes we cross paths with kids, or they find us and tell us. And often it's something that you did that seems so inconsequential at the time that you wouldn't have remembered it that night. And yet for somebody else, this was a big deal.
Yeah, I get that a lot as
yeah,
a minister.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You think that nobody's listening or nobody's yeah. hearing you that particular day. And then years later, they send you a letter of how it changed their life.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of how it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
So you give up the results. And that's a hard discipline. We like to be thanked, you know, when we do something. And that's not always going to happen.
Yeah. So to me, it feels like part of the universal flow. We teach that everyone not only has a spark of divinity within them, that they have the same amount of divinity. Mm-hmm. So the same amount as Jesus, the same amount as Buddha or anyone else, and that they can access that anytime they choose. And I think one of the important factors you're talking about, Larry, is not insisting on the result that you want to get.
That's a hard discipline.
Yeah, from your practice or from your service.
I think what's going on now, because you're asking, what are you doing these days?
Yes.
Taking the columns and the political stuff that I've been doing for a long time, taking the spiritual stuff that I've been doing for a long time, I'm more frightened at where our country is going now than at any time in my life. I was a senior in high school when Robert Kennedy was shot, when Martin Luther King was shot. I was in high school when Kennedy was shot. And the 60s were no fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we are I don't think in the end it's a political problem America has. It's a spiritual problem. It's a catastrophic failure of love.
This is what I wanted to talk with you about today.
This is a catastrophic failure of love that we're looking at here. I don't let liberals off the hook here either. Mm-hmm. I'm a liberal. We've gotten trapped in a sense. If you go look historically back to the 60s, the civil rights movement defending human rights was important. Defending minority rights was important. And liberals did that. In the process, they began to realize that they didn't like regular folks all that much. Too racist, too opinionated, too conservative. And you can't stop loving people, mm-hmm. even when you disagree with them, even when you disapprove of what they think and what they do. And I think the left, on a massive level, lost any love that they had for the people who lived in the American heartland, who felt that. And then Ronald Reagan showed up and said, "I love you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's morning in America." And the people, the constituents of Franklin Roosevelt, started to shift over because they felt the contempt. And that's a real problem for the left that the left has not squarely faced. That this is a failure of love. And if tolerance and acceptance is supposed to be who you are and what you do, then there should be huge embarrassment on the left that we've dropped something very important for a long time.
Sure. So how can we regain this without seeing it as, a left or a right problem, but as you say, a failure of love. How can we promote this acceptance and tolerance and love without necessarily identifying it connected to politics?
I think we have to start doing exactly what we do in spiritual practice. You see people as souls in bodysuits. And the more you know about their backstory, about who their teachers were, what happened to them in their lives, their politics and their faith, civil. I have a dear friend that I grew up with, and he fell in love with a woman whose mom had just committed suicide and had a daughter, and the two of them were deeply hurt and troubled. And this fellow loved them. And it was not going to be easy, I think, to take care of them. They were going to be high-maintenance people. And he became an evangelical Christian, and for whom the concept of taking up your cross is a regular idea, because I think that's what he needed to turn to give him the kind of strength to do what he had decided was going to be one of his major missions in life. He was going to love these people and take care of them,
mm-hmm.
and he did and has done. I've asked congregations, including this one here. How many of you ever had a political argument that ended with the other person bursting into tears and saying, "My God, how could I have been so wrong for so long?"
Right.
And everybody laughs. I go, no, I'm serious. Put your hands up if this has ever happened with you. And nobody does. So if nobody does, then the question is, why are we still doing this? Mm-hmm. Why are we still having these arguments? We already know where it's going in the end. And the risk to us, and the hook has been set really deep in America's culture now. The more wicked we imagine our opponents, the more righteous we get to feel in opposing them, the more heroic.
Mm-hmm.
Our heroism, and this is very narcissistic, our heroism depends on their being demonic.
Mm.
And the more demonic they are, the more heroic we become. And we have a vested interest in this now, and our political discourse has been contaminated with this. And I think both sides are doing it, but I have to admit, I think it's been the QAnon and all of that stuff. It's been more energetic in the right. But we are a self-polarizing society now. It is almost impossible for us as a people to experience anything without immediately weaponizing it in the culture wars for use against somebody else.
So what's the solution to all this, Larry? This is my life's purpose is about bringing a solution to separation, and
it's
this when to me is a symptom of separation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So when you ask people how you're doing, we have to really mean it.
Okay.
How are you? How are you, Tony?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah.
And you as a pastor know, you know, people want to tell you what's happening in their lives. You're one of those people that people turn to when they're in a jam.
Yes.
Because they know you'll hear them. And you'll be looking past the circumstances into the soul level. You're looking to what spirit is this that's having this difficulty mm-hmm. here?
Yes.
That's transformative. And I think we have to continue to try to do that. We have mm-hmm. to keep trying to love each other.
Yeah.
And see each other.
I think Thich Nhat Hanh called that deep listening.
Yeah.
And I learned that at Unity in seminary is deep listening to others.
So I think we have to want to know what other people's backstories are. And it's not to convince them about a political argument, global warming, abortion, whatever. That's probably not going to happen, certainly not at the beginning. Right now, what conversation is going to get us is to convince other people that we're not as wicked as talk radio and other people want them to believe mm-hmm. we are.
Right.
And if you're a liberal, you have to be willing to do that work too. You have to be willing to look at the person you're talking to and realize that these are people who have families whom they love.
Sure.
Nobody wants bad schools or crime in their neighborhoods or any of that stuff. And all of us are dealing with living on the same planet. People get sick, people die. We have all the same struggles.
Yes.
My motorcycle got a flat tire when I was on a trip a couple years ago. And I wound bumping my way into some guy's driveway. And he returned shortly in a pickup truck, and he saw me with a flat tire. And he offered to put drive me back to my house so I could get my trailer and come pick it up. And this is a fair distance drive for him. And he meant it. So I got in his truck and we're headed, across the bridge back to the Cape. And I don't know whether I exuded liberal pheromones or what, but at some point he said, "You do realize I'm a Trump guy, right?" And I said, "Look, I don't have to talk politics with you." And he said, "No, that's fine." And he said, "If you piss me off, I'll just, pull over and throw you out." But here's this fellow doing me a real kindness, mm-hmm. an exceptional kindness. Turned out he had lost somebody in Iraq. And here's the president saying that the Middle East isn't worth a single American life and we need to just get out of there. And that resonated with him. He thought so too. We just needed to get out of there and not kill anybody else's sons over there. You hear the story and you go, "Damn, I get it."
Mm-hmm.
I get it. He lost somebody important to him, and he's asking himself, was this in the national interest? Did America really need this to happen? And in his conclusion, no. And then here's a leader saying, "Well, I'll get us out." And people have reasons besides that they're wicked. Mm. And I would like people to, if they're conservative, to understand that I have reasons without, being wicked.
Right.
And be willing to accept that they have their reasons too.
Yes.
And so we talk to each other so we can know each other, and we know each other so we can love each other. That's the spiritual reason for wanting to open our mouths and say stuff to each other.
Yes.
So that we can know each other, so we can love each other.
Amen.
And I don't know whether that's going to work, whether enough people are going to do it fast enough. The power of media in the modern era eclipses anything our founders could have possibly imagined when they designed our government.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. And I was actually asked by the Unitarians fairly recently to talk to them about what do you do with your despair? What do you do with your conviction that this is going to get a whole lot worse? And if you're my age, you'll probably die seeing it getting worse and worse for the rest of your life.
Larry, we're going to have to wrap it up pretty mm-hmm. soon. But taking some inspiration from what you're saying is, what is our reason for being here? What is our reason for talking to someone? It's to get to know them. What is our reason to get to know them so that we can love them? And that's what we're doing here. At Unity, that's why I feel spiritual communities are so important to transcend our differences. We have many people on every side of the aisle, not just left and right, but mm-hmm. All different perspectives on life here at Unity. And we are teaching that we share a common humanity, which is what you're talking about, getting to know someone. And what happens here very rapidly, which I feel transcends the time it took to get this bad, is we get to a place of common divinity. If we can see our common humanity, we receive this grace that allows us to experience our common divinity. And I feel, like you said in the beginning, that it's not necessarily a political problem or a social problem, but a spiritual one. So thank you for that.
Can I offer a closing thought?
Yes,
About the despair I alluded to just now.
Yes.
The idea of the orchestra playing on the decks of the Titanic has been offered occasionally as a sort of a symbol of futility. And I'd like to turn that around. If the decks are tilting and you know how to play the violin, then that's what you're supposed to be doing right now. You play the violin as sweetly and as loud and as long as you can, because that's what your gift that you've been given is. It's not futile.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we're supposed to do. You give your gift until you can't anymore.
Amen.
And I'm getting old, and I'm trying to do that.
You're doing great.
To give my gift until I can't give it anymore.
And I appreciate it.
Thank you for this chance to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, Larry. I appreciate it so much, what you're doing in our community and the talks that you're giving to adults now, how you're teaching some of the adults. And I think it's a bridge to perhaps the despair that you perceive or feel, and where we are in terms of feeling so great about life. I want everyone to feel this way. I really do. And so I invite all of you to come to Unity on Cape Cod and to experience a world powerfully transformed by the growing movement of our shared spiritual awakening. Thank you, Larry Brown. It was a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you very much. God bless. Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you, each and every one, for tuning in to this special edition of A World Powerfully Transformed, a Unity on Cape Cod podcast. If you would like to support this program or find out more about Unity on Cape Cod and our Sunday services, please visit our website, unityoncapecod.org, or stop by our spiritual center at 147 Walton Ave in Hyannis, Mass. We would love to get to know you. Be blessed and remember to be a blessing. This podcast was made possible in part through a grant from Unity Worldwide Ministries and the Templeton Foundation.